Talk some college football right now with a guy that covers the game for Sporting News. Good to have back here in Salt Lake City with us on the Bill Riley Show, Bill Bender. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Bill. How you doing?
I'm doing great. 80 long days, Bill. I always say it. It's the season we wait longest for, and it flies by in just the blink of an eye. But 80 days away from the opener, how you killing time this summer?
Oh, I try to relax. You know, you got to spend as much time with family as possible. We went to a concert over the weekend. So, I mean, like you said, 11, I mean, you know, he's getting on about 11 Saturdays left till it gets serious. And, you know, I just try to enjoy the summer as much as possible before we get going.
Well, we say 80 days, but, you know, for us, but for you especially, the media days start to begin in mid-July. So we'll be back down in L.A. for the Pac-12 football meetings and things of that nature. So really, the football coverage begins at the end of July. We don't have to wait till the end of August for that, and then camp starts, and it really gets rolling for sure. Let's start talking about the locals first, and we're the you know, broadcast home of the University of Utah. They've gotten a little traction here in the offseason. Some folks like them as a real contender, not just a, hey, maybe if everything falls right for them contender, but maybe a legit contender in the Pac-12 South. How do you view Utah heading into the year, and maybe more importantly, how do you view the Pac-12 South?
Well, that Twitter poll, I agree with everything. I think quarterback's the big question there. Who are they going to start under center? I did a list last week, and I think Utah is one of the it may not be the toughest place to play in all the FBS, but it's going to be a tough place to play for a lot of teams this year. They have a very favorable home schedule with the teams coming in, so that's important. And then I think the Pac-12 South, you know, it's so wide open. It really is. With UCLA, USC, huge question marks. Utah to get up in that mix. It's just there are so many good teams in that division and the Arizona schools. That's why the Pac-12 is so good, but it's also it can work to their detriment as far as the college football playoff goes.
Yeah, I think there's three in the South and three in the North that are real contenders. I'm not going to discount Arizona or Arizona State because both are good programs, but I think Utah, UCLA, and USC in the South, and I think Oregon, Washington, and Stanford probably in the North, but I don't think, Bill, there's going to be an elite team this year in the Pac-12. What about you?
I mean, Stanford out of this, I agree with you on the six, by the way. Stanford kind of has the look just because of McCaffrey, the offensive line. Another quarterback question for them. And I know of those six teams, the team that everybody's kind of really jumping on the bandwagon is Washington, with the quarterback-running back combination that they have. And, if they beat Oregon, the way Chris Peterson's coached and built that program, could really be in the mix, which would be a story. But, those six teams, I probably trust Stanford the most. But, and I'm not ready to discount Oregon quite yet.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Only two of those six teams are, I guess, set at quarterback. Obviously, Browning back at Washington and at UCLA, they've got Rosen, but I thought it was really unusual coming out of the spring. It's not unusual at Utah, but they do have three really good prospects, and I think whoever they get is probably going to be an upgrade throwing over Travis Wilson. I was just really surprised at USC. You would have figured coming out of spring football that Helton going into his first real season would be locked in, but they're not very locked at quarterback right now, are they?
And they better get there. I wouldn't be surprised if both Donald and Brown play against Alabama. Because they're going to have to feel their way in that game, and that is the toughest opener you can possibly have against the defending national champion. So, and like you said, with UCLA, kind of the toughest team for me to figure out. I mean, they got the quarterback, certainly. But that's a team that I look at them, and I'm like, wouldn't be surprised if they went 11-1. Wouldn't be surprised if they went 6-6. That's just kind of the up-and-down team they are, also with a tough opener against Texas A&M.
I always like to ask the national guys when I talk to them because – I think Utah now has got everybody's attention in the Pac-12 conference. Not that they didn't for a while, but last year winning 10 games and going to Oregon and doing what they did at Oregon, they weren't getting that polite little pat on the back. You guys play really hard and you're well coached. That's like getting the citizenship award or the sportsmanship award at the end of Little League because you played really hard. I think last year was the year they kind of arrived and said, okay, we're now full-fledged members of the Pac-12 Conference. Utah always had a little bit of a national rep come postseason time when they were in the Mountain West Conference, but nationally, what's Kyle Whittingham's program's rep right now?
Steady, and I'm teasing a little bit. I know next week we're doing our coach rankings, and I had Kyle Whittingham in with a clump of those Pac-12 coaches, the Mike Leach, the Jim Moore Jr., and I think he's above that. I mean, if you're on the Pac-12 coach rankings, I think David Shaw, Mark Helfrich, and probably Peterson, Whittingham are your top four. But I think just the steadiness of the program, and yeah, it took a couple years to maybe get under the Pac-12 feet under them, so to speak, and now they're ready to compete for Pac-12 titles, and it doesn't surprise me given that Utah is a tough place to play, like I said earlier. I mean, they beat Michigan there last year. That was a big win, too, even though it was season open. And they're ready to compete for Pac-12 championships and maybe a playoff berth, on a consistent basis.
Yeah, Bill Bender's our guest from Sporting News, College Football Insider. It's funny you mentioned Helfrich's name. I really like Mark Helfrich. I get to interact with him a few times a year, but I'm not quite so sure. I think this is a pretty big year for him. He kind of overhauls his coaching staff. Scott Frost leaves and goes to Central Florida. He brings Brady Hoke in, reconfigures his defensive staff. I think he's a good coach, but they get athletes there, but he hadn't done a whole lot since he's been named head coach there.
I might disagree with you there. I think, he got him to the college football championship game. I know everybody's still in Chip Kelly's shadow. And I'm giving him a mulligan last year because, they lost Mariota, who was arguably the most efficient college football quarterback ever. So, they need to find an answer at quarterback. Obviously, that system works. And, there are still question marks. If they do roll out a 7-5 this year, then, yeah, I'd totally buy that. But, it's a tough spot to be in when you follow a guy like Chip Kelly, but I'm still willing to give Helfrich the benefit of the doubt for now. And like you said, Brady Hoke, that'll be interesting to see how that goes on that defensive side.
That's another guy I like a lot. I got to know Brady when he was at San Diego State for the short time, and then Utah played him when they were up at Michigan. I like him. He might be one of those guys that might be better suited as a coordinator. Might be pretty good, that fire and brimstone defensive coordinator, but it was kind of an out of the blue hire, I thought, at Oregon.
Absolutely, yeah. I thought Brady Hoke would be in line for maybe another head coaching job somewhere else. He's a defensive line coach at heart from his early days at Michigan before he did a good job at San Diego State. And I probably got overwhelmed a little bit with Michigan, but I think him and the defensive coordinator, if he can get that rolling, if they always with those spread teams, you got to have a little bit of defense with it, and I think his scheme should help. And, again, just an interesting fit, and it'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
Talking to Bill Bender from Sporting News, there's a story coming out today, and I don't know how much credence there is to it, but people at Baylor wanting to make this a one-year suspension for Art Briles, is there any real self-awareness going on in Waco, Texas these days?
Well, I'm kind of sitting on that. I didn't want to write anything yet because, I've heard you saw the report from USA Today that it's unlikely, which it should be unlikely. It shouldn't be unlikely. It shouldn't happen. I they got to move on from Art Briles. And, if they're getting pressures from the boosters, you tell the boosters, so what? We'll take your support. We'll leave it. We need to clean this program up. And, as I've been emphasizing all along, I think Jim Grubb's a great fit on an interim basis there because you're getting the highest character coach possible. And he would be a guy, until they figure out what they want to do next. But dragging this out with Art Briles, it's not a good idea, and it's not a good look for a program already under the microscope.
Now, I agree with you on Grobe. He was squeaky clean and a really good coach. And, heck, if you can win at Wake Forest with that small enrollment and the admission standards there, you could probably win just about anywhere. What about long-term? Obviously, they've got to find an athletic director and a president and things like that first, but long-term fit at Baylor, do they stay with that same system of Art Briles because he knew it so well inside and out? They seem to have been able to recruit with it, but are there some names being kicked about yet as who might be long-term fits there in Waco?
Not yet, but I mean, if Grove is a guy that they keep for a year and then they want to move on from him, I mean, there's no shortage of those hot coordinator/coach types in the state of Texas alone. I mean, they could go with a Major Applewhite, Houston offensive coordinator. They could take a run at Sonny Cumbie at Texas, or at TCU. And, Chad Morse at SMU, any one of those guys. I know that's a unique style of offense, and it would be hard to replicate the type of numbers that Art Briles was able to put up there as the head coach. But I think they can do it. They have the talent. They have the means with that stadium. But they've got to clean up everything else, which, to me, again, it's crazy. It's crazy that you have to phrase it this way, but football should come second. They should worry about the problems they created and fixing them first, obviously.
speaking of the Big 12, they seem to have made it pretty clear, except for David Boren, who always seems to have a different opinion than everybody else. Even when there is a consensus, there's not. But they don't seem to appear ready to expand anytime soon, and they're going to get their championship game, and they just got their $30 million per team. So where does that leave a program like BYU, the other big program here in the state of Utah that declared its independence when Utah joined the Pac-12? It worked out okay in the short term, but they're finding more and more that being independent in the Division I football world is a tough place to be. You're really not playing for anything. So where is BYU now, and has the perception of that program changed nationally at all over the last 4 or 5 years?
I don't think it's the perception of the program itself has changed. I respect what they do. I think they schedule. I mean, their schedule last year was brutal. It's even, it might be more brutal in a lot of ways this year. Obviously, they're trying to get into the Big 12, and they haven't been very secretive about it. They're pretty open about it, as they should be. I just think in the college football and playoff environment in particular, you need to be in a Power 5 conference. Notre Dame's going to start to figure out that, not just BYU. So, I mean, whether it's the Big 12 down the line, and I love how you just put it, with the, there's no consensus even in, when there is one. And, you know, if they look to expand, I think BYU would be on that list, along with a Houston, along with a Memphis, Cincinnati, those type of schools. But I really do believe BYU, with the cross between football and basketball, offers more than enough. They're the closest thing to a Power 5 school you can be.
You mentioned Notre Dame, but they're already kind of a de facto member of the ACC. So it's easier for Notre Dame because, one, they're Notre Dame. But, two, if you play 4 ACC games, then you only have to schedule 5 others. And you're Notre Dame, and you've got the playoff exception. So I think it's a lot easier to be Notre Dame. Plus, even they have put their foot in the conference water these days. Even if it's 1 foot, they're at least partially in the conference pool.
Yeah, it is easier to be Notre Dame, but then again, I'm not so sure this ACC arrangement works for them to the extent people believe it does. I mean, what does scheduling NC State and Wake Forest do for you, really? I think Notre Dame should be full go in a conference like they are in basketball, and I think BYU should be. And you know, expansion is not done. There'll be some expansion down the line, whether it's Big 12, Big 10, whoever, because these TV deals are getting absurd, and schools are going to want a piece of that money.
Do you think we get to the point at any time, Bill, in the next 10 years where we get super conferences? I mean, the SEC is kind of the de facto super conference now because they've got the 14 and the 17 divisions, more, I think more so than the Big Ten. But do you ever foresee a day where even some, we begin to see these conferences morph a little bit more and we get those 20-team super conferences? Or do you think that's not something that's in the offing?
It's certainly possible, and the scenario I keep pointing to is if the Big 12 doesn't get its act together, you get the 10 schools in the Big 12, and of the other 4 Power 5 conferences, you got 10 spots open. So I don't think the possibility of 4 16-team conferences is totally feasible to me if the Big 12 doesn't get its act together, because they could just get swallowed up by the other 4. The Big 10 and SEC are obviously pulling in huge revenues. The ACC doing well as well, and then the Pac-12 has that, you know, it's not like they're doing bad. I like the Pac-12 where they stand as well. I think all of those conferences are pretty steady. It's the Big 12 that's going to, the fate of the Big 12 will determine whether or not and how soon we get into that super conference era.
It's funny you like where the Pac-12 is right now. A lot of members of the Pac-12 aren't so happy with where they are now with the TV deal and, you know, kickoff times and things like that. You can't do anything about your geography and where you happen to play. Pac-12 is always going to be in the West. But how much is the conference hurt by its TV deal and some of the late kickoffs? I think it certainly hurt Christian McCaffrey's Heisman last year. I think if he was in the Midwest or in the South, he probably wins that Heisman trophy. But where do you see kind of the Pac-12 big picture as a conference?
It's hard for me to weigh in on that because I'm watching it late at night.
Right.
I love the Pac-12. I love sitting up and watching it, but I don't know. I'm not like every other East Coast viewer. So I think the game time certainly had a lot to do with Christian McCaffrey not winning the Heisman last year. Not enough people saw him. I think the TV deals need to improve. You can't do anything about geography. You can't do anything about sunlight, but it wouldn't hurt to, you know, try to get him on the earlier games, big games earlier in the day. I think if they can log up at 4 o'clock and 7 o'clock spotlight. But you know, again, that's that East Coast bias speaking that does, it's certainly real. But, you know, what the Pac-12 needs is to just keep doing what they're doing. Not, it's better, you know, obviously those things can improve. It's not in the same boat as the Big 12 by any means. I think the Pac-12 has done the right thing so far in general.
It's 1:22 Mountain Daylight Time on a Monday, and I haven't seen Jim Harbaugh anywhere on Twitter yet. Is he on vacation? What's going on? I haven't seen a subtweet. I haven't seen a shot fired across an SEC bow today. Is Harbaugh waiting for later in the news cycle? What's going on?
Yeah, he keeps us busy. I actually went to a satellite camp in Warren last week, and you know what? Those things aren't a big deal at all. They help kids. There was a lot of high school kids there. There's nothing seedy about them. I think people are getting bent out of shape. If Jim Harbaugh wants to run to, you know, 25 states over a month and go to 40 camps and do what he's doing, you know what? That's commendable in some ways. So, like I said, he's a headline maker for all of us. It helps me because whenever he does something, it helps me out a little bit. So, he's interesting, and certainly, you know what? Michigan's going to be right in the hunt for a Big Ten championship this year if they can win at Michigan State and Ohio State.
It's good for guys like you and me in the media. I understand that, but I don't see a downside to Jim Harbaugh in college. I like a guy that breaks conventional thinking. I like a guy that thinks outside of the box. Yeah, he's a little kooky and wacky, but it's all done with a plan. I think having Harbaugh back in college football, especially at a place like Michigan, is terrific for the sport.
Yeah, he's unlike any coach I've ever seen. He really is. I mean, he has that aura about him. He does like things like he said, unconventional. Now, there's a lot of people, the way I can best describe him is, there's a lot of people that say, well, I don't care what other people think, and, you know, in the back of their mind, or whether they're checking their email box, whatever, they really do care. He does not care what people think. He's going to do things his way. He's going to, you know, be combative, and he's been the best thing possible for a Michigan football program that was kind of an embarrassment at the end of the Brady Hoke era.
What did you say about the coaching rankings? When's that piece coming out on Sporting News?
I think we're doing it next week. So we're going to rank them 1 to 128, rank each of the Power 5 conferences as well. And I've still got a headache. I'm kind of fine-tuning some of it because, you know, how those lists, all they do is make people angry and fill my inbox up with mad people.
I'll tell you what, if you want to have some fun on a list off that list, put the coaches together that you wouldn't want to face in the octagon. And I'll tell you what, Kyle Whittingham will be in your top five right there, and there's no doubt in my mind about it.
That sounds like a more fun list to write anyway.
Well, I'll tell you what,
for sure.
I'm still convinced that Kyle Whittingham could go out and give you three series at linebacker. I've never seen a guy so fit and so dialed in like he is. He hasn't missed a workout, he said, in like 25 years. Every day.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it reminds me of the old Ron Zook story where I think I was watching an Illinois game once and they mentioned that, you know, Coach Zook could squat 400-some pounds, and I kind of, like, looked at him and I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. So, yeah, and I don't want to mess with any of these coaches in the octagon. So, I tried to keep to myself a little bit and do my job.
Hey, Bill, thanks for jumping on. Enjoy your downtime while you have it, and then we'll be back to football before we know it. Thanks so much.
That's a promise. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right, there you go. Bill Bender with us here on the Bill Riley Show, Sporting News college football writer. Follow him at BillBender92